Hello, coffee makers, not coffee takers. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr., and I'm one half of the Cyber Coffee Hour, along with Alfredo B. Nash Jr. We're two cybersecurity experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in this field and also the experiences of others so we all can learn, elevate, and ultimately realize that we all belong in this space. The views, opinions, and thoughts are of the Cyber Coffee Hour and not those of our employers or personal or professional relationships. So for today's show, we're going to discuss cyber risk and how companies can mitigate it. And I'm going to be joined today by special guest Omiyajuwo Doyin for the conversation. Now, Doyin, she is a seasoned cybersecurity professional with over 6 years of experience in consulting. In the consulting, financial, and technology industry, her experience and skill set cut across multiple cybersecurity domains such as cyber strategy, governance, risk management, business continuity, and disaster recovery, cyber resilience, security operations, and data privacy. Doyin is a manager at Deloitte UK, where she supports organizations in protecting their data, systems, and assets from cyber threats while complying with industry standards and regulatory requirements. She enjoys mentoring junior colleagues in the industry by providing guidance and support based on the experience she has amassed over the years. Doyin, welcome to the Cyber Coffee Hour.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for inviting me to the show. I remember that very day when we had that first chat and you were like, going to invite me. I really wanted to shy away, but yeah, I'm glad I'm here.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. I'm glad you're here today. So we could just get right into it. So today we're going to discuss one article in particular. It's titled "Cyber Risk is Growing. Here's How Companies Can Keep Up." Now this is an article authored by Michael Chertoff, dated back at 13 April 2023. And I'm very interested to really, like I said, we're just going to have a back and forth. And I'd love to hear how this resonates with your, of course, your experience, your expertise. Yeah. But just digging into this article a bit. So, yeah, headlines continue to be filled with reports of government agencies and large companies being victimized by cyber intrusions. This remains true despite a proliferation of cybersecurity guidance and large increases in global cybersecurity spending, around $150 billion. Dollars per year globally on cyber products and services. Why? In addition to increasingly well-financed threat actors, the attack surface where these attacks are deployed is changing dramatically. I'll stop right there, and Doyin, I'd love for you to weigh in a bit, maybe just first thoughts that come to mind.
Over the course of the years, organizations, everybody is increasing their spendings in cybersecurity. However, the threat landscape keeps changing, right? The risk profile keeps changing as well. And one of the reasons, because a lot of organizations now are making use of technology. And because of that, there is more opportunity. The attack surface keeps increasing, right? We have, the article I've said, we have organizations making use, a lot of organizations migrating to the cloud. It also exposes them to a different kind of risk. We have, the use of artificial intelligence, machine learning in a lot of processes. We have, the IoT devices, which bring their own specific kind of risk, because a lot of them were not designed with security in mind. And because the attack surface keeps expanding and the threat landscape keeps changing, the risk organizations face keeps changing from time to time. And even existing risk tends to also change their profile, right? A risk that might be low to an organization today due to the new tactics that are available. Also, the attackers, really, they are not relaxing, right? They are finding another best ways to, circumvent security measures, right? And that means everybody has to keep up. Everybody has to, all hands have to be on deck, because the attack surface is expanding. There are threats, and as security professionals, one of our jobs is to ensure that we implement security controls to bring, the risks that impact our organizations to an acceptable level. Whatever is within the organization's risk appetite. Yeah.
Right. And I think, just to really piggyback on what you're saying. So like the, the ongoing surge in cyber intrusions, you know, targeting, I even say with government agencies, large corporations, you know, they continue to persist despite increased cybersecurity guidance. I mean, you see trainings, you know, trying to get awareness out there. And it's just, you know, we've seen a rise as it pertains to global cybersecurity spending, you know, even an article mentioned reaching around $150 billion annually. And it attributes to, you know, threat actors who are very sophisticated, and that's a contributing factor to the evolving attack surface. So, you know, applications, you know, a lot of organizations are using more SaaS, and that's, you know, software as a service applications. It's a big jump from at least 15 years ago, which poses a big challenge because, again, we're talking about, you know, you're increasing that attack surface. You're creating different entry points for an attacker to exploit. And when we're talking about that, you talk about IoT, Internet of Things, devices, you know, the article mentioned that it's expected to reach about 41 billion by 2025. Of IoT devices, along with deployment of 5G networks, you know, that's another factor that, you know, introduces new complexities.
I just wanted to add that, I mean, with the IoT devices, they also bring their own kind of risk, right? So a lot of IoT devices, they are built with limited resources just for them to perform, you know, what exactly the device has been made to perform. So it means there are sometimes limitations to implementing security controls, implementation with respect to, you know, deploying security patches and all of that. And that introduces, you know, a new level of complexity and a different dimension of risk into an organization. And with IoT devices, especially in industries, the risk is, it moves beyond data loss, moves beyond reputational risk. It could also lead to loss of lives, right? So you can imagine, let's say maybe a critical infrastructure, for example, that's is being shut down. People could possibly lose their lives. You can imagine an industrial control system that, you know, people are actively working on and gets attacked, for example, and it malfunctions. So you can have people actually losing their lives. So, it's really getting serious, right? And that's why it's very important for organizations to identify, you know, their risk, identify their assets, identify what are their crown jewels so that they can actually put in the right controls and, you know, implement it as it applies to their environment.
No, I absolutely agree. And even just kind of touching base on, as you mentioned, with IT devices that not factoring security really from the start, it does create that vulnerability where, you have all these devices that may serve as a purpose as far as trying to give that convenience factor. But, you know, the more convenience you can get from a device, security is going to suffer. More security, convenience is going to suffer. So it's really a balancing act.
Yeah, I mean, what you just said reminds me, I think somewhere in the CISSP guide, there's somewhere, I don't know if you've seen it before, because I know you're studying for the CISSP, right? Where there's a balance between security and usability. So it's really like this. I mean, the more you increase security, there's a possibility that usability is going down low. And the more you want to make the application or, you know, things more usable, there's a possibility that you need to reduce security. And like you said, it's our job as professionals to, you know, to balance it, because at the end of the day, what are we doing? We are supporting the business, right? It's not the intention to overboard a system with security controls and you even kill the business itself from functioning.
Right. You put on so much, it's so secure, you can't even use it. You can't even turn it on. So, so just going to dig back into the article here. Yeah, so for the article again, so to manage cyber risk in this context, we need to fundamentally change the way we measure performance. Measures we see utilized today include things like maturity assessments, which use a scale to define progressive levels of maturity for capabilities utilized to manage cyber risk, compliance attestations, where a company or third-party auditors attest or validate that a predefined set of security controls are in place, vulnerability aging reports, which measure the presence of critical and high vulnerabilities present on IT assets and how long they have gone unaddressed, and mean time to detect statistics, which measure how long it takes to detect threat activity inside an organization's environment. These measures are valuable and necessary, but no longer sufficient, and they need to be bookended in three ways. So I'll stop there a bit then. And I guess, Dylan, given what I just mentioned, from what you've seen and maybe what you've experienced, yeah, I guess, within your career, how much of this do you may see, or really how the value of having like some of these reports I just mentioned, having these agent reports, yeah, doing these different compliance reports and things of that nature, like how much value is really put into that for our organization?
Well, I actually think they are highly valuable, to be honest, because from the vulnerability management reports and all of that, I mean, it's been spelled out clearly that way, but they are basically key risk indicators, or some organizations, some people call it key control indicators, really. And in a way, it helps you effectively monitor, you know, the status of your risk, the controls you've put into place. And, you know, with the numbers you get from the system, you're able to track, okay, this control we have in place, sorry, this risk we are managing with particular controls, what is the trend? You know, doing a trend analysis, it also helps you to report back to senior management or the board, for example, for decision making. So it's just you basically, right, monitoring your, you know, your risk, your threat landscape, monitoring your risk, the risk universe, right? And so it gives a lot of insights, and it's really very important. But I think the article is just trying to say, you know, aside from doing all of these, you can go an extra level. And what I've read from the article is that we should go more into identifying identification stage. And I agree with what the article has said. However, if you look at the risk management lifecycle, the very first stage is identification, really, because how do you protect what you do not know? But I think the article has taken a step further. Aside from knowing your assets, aside from knowing your processes, which, you know, of course, which might have risk to them, which might have risk, you should also go into details. I mean, looking at your third-party suppliers, right? And they are cited examples such as the SolarWinds, for example, with the Orion solution, where, you know, the supply chain attacks, right? With, you know, the attackers were able to get into several other organizations just because they were able to introduce a malware into the application, and it got into other organizations through the updates. So it's about looking at, you know, more targeted scenarios, looking in depth, right? So aside from the general risk assessment of doing the asset-based risk assessment, what is in my environment, looking at the processes, also going in depth, who are my suppliers, what are my entry points in terms of, you know, where can I get attacked from, what are my threats, what are the risks exposing, you know. So it's not just the risk limited to what you manage right now. So if you're going to the cloud, you look at what are the risks, you know, for me bringing my, taking my services to the cloud. If you have third-party suppliers, you're going to see what critical services am I using third parties from? Because if those critical services go down, you're going to be impacted, right? So you're looking, looking in depth, right? So that's very important. Identifying, you know, more like what is important to me, my crown jewels, my assets, you know, and that also goes as well as looking at the third parties or people who are also in charge of those critical, you know, aspects of the organization.
Yeah, and I do like how the article, it kind of lists out those three things that, as I mentioned, for when it comes to measuring cybersecurity risk.
Yeah.
So first, I mentioned, you know, organizations need greater visibility into their inherent risk levels, considering, yeah, the number of applications, as you mentioned, database sizes, code repositories, regional operations, M&A velocity, and supplier dependencies. Secondly, enhanced transparency, accuracy, precision in measuring performance against, mm-hmm, likely threats should be enhanced, leveraging frameworks like the MITRE Corporation's attack framework. And lastly, planning and measuring performance against low probability and high consequence events are crucial, mm-hmm, requiring a resilience planning around severe but plausible scenarios.
Yeah. So, okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that really tying in even to what you just said earlier about, you know, having a clear, I'd even say a vision or maybe even playbook to say, like, you know, what are, you know, what are our high priority items? What are things that we need to make sure that we are prioritizing, and we have a sufficient security around it. And also doing, make sure we have that planning in place, that, I guess, organization preparedness, making sure that we when those type of things happen, or, you know, the worst comes to worst, and it does happen, what are the steps that we take to make sure? Right.
Yeah. So I wanted to
And I didn't mean to cut. Yes. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So I wanted to talk a bit on cyber resilience, right? And I think that's what the third aspect is looking at. Because you're looking at, most of the time when we do risk assessments, right? Because with risk assessment, you're looking at your threats, you're looking at, I mean, you're looking at the likelihood, and you're also looking at the impact, right? So if a threat exposes a vulnerability, what's the likelihood of that to happen? And if it happens, what are the impacts? And usually with risk assessment, you have your risk matrix, right? Which you plot your likelihood and your impact against. That's what gives you the value of your risk. But with respect to severe and possible events, you'd see that when you actually do your risk assessment, the impact is going to be very high. Your likelihood is going to be low. So by the time you multiply the likelihood and the impact, there's a possibility it's probably going to give you more like a medium kind of risk, because it's something that can happen, that can have a high impact, but the frequency is actually really low, right? And I think it's very important for organizations to actually also look at that. It's not going to happen frequently, right? But what if it happens? The organization might just cease to exist, right? So, for example, let's look at let's say a ransomware attack that impacts, you know, the production environment and also impacts the backups as well. So, if that happens, the production environment is not functional, the backups are not functional, and you do not have, let's say, you know, offline backups, right? Backups are not connected to the network to be able to restore the environment. It means critical services are not going to be, you won't be able to run critical services, right? So the organization, you know, we're looking at reputational risk, we're looking at financial loss, we're looking at loss of customers' trust, we're looking at probably regulatory fines as well, you know, there are a lot of, so I think, and in the line of my work, right, really, I've had to work on something related to that. That's why I was eager to talk about it, because I actually spent a couple of months working on a project on cyber resilience. And what were we really doing? We were developing a cyber vault, right? So the cyber vaults really is more like we have a storage, different levels of storage, and what do we do? We identify critical services to the organizations. Then we see, how do we perform a bare metal recovery? What do we need for a bare metal recovery? When we identify all of that, we ensure that all of that, we have everything we need stored in something called a cyber vault. It's quite interesting, really. And that's like one of the ways, or one of the controls you can put into place. However, it is expensive, right? It's an expensive project to implement. So with risk, there's always, you know, you're looking at the cost-benefit analysis. Some organizations might say, okay, I'm going to bear this risk. I don't know, I have the cost to implement this, right, at the moment. And some organizations are going to say, if this happens, this could be the end of us, right? So we are going to invest in implementing this. So at the end of the day, risk also comes with, there's risk, there's opportunity, there are choices to always be made, right? That is why I'll tie it back to the reporting bit, right, where you keep reporting to senior management, because it's very vital to have all of this information to actually make decisions, right? So, I mean, the implementation of the cyber vault, for example, is we are looking at ransomware attack, right? A ransomware attack in this scenario is not just the one that's taking over your production environment, taking over your production, taking over your backups, right? It means now there needs to be a last resort. But a lot of organizations do not have this last resort. So if it happens, they're probably going to be stuck with having to pay the ransom to get their information back, right? And so, I mean, that's just the thing with risk. You have to keep making decisions. What's best? Is it within our appetite? If things go wrong, are we okay with the consequences, really?
And so, and even with that, how much of a factor do you believe that cyber insurance plays as it pertains to, like, cyber risk? Does when a company has to decide, you know, or they're faced with that scenario, you know, if this happens, if this risk is fulfilled, or, you know, like you said, it's going to be the end of us. Do we see it maybe an increase, or is that where kind of cyber insurance steps in to help to help deal with that type of risk, to help a company in that regard?
Well, cyber insurance, I mean, might help. I mean, sometimes maybe when there's a ransomware attack, we expect to bring in, you know, maybe consultants in to do the investigation. They might be willing to pay for that. I remember with cyber insurance, you're going to have, what's it called? You're going to have terms and conditions you have to sign, right? There are going to be some level of checks to be sure that you, as an organization, have the right controls in place, right? But with the one I'm talking about, it's different from cyber insurance. Cyber insurance has its own place. But with this, we're not just relying on cyber insurance. We're actually looking at, if this happens, can we go back to normalcy? Is organization resilient enough with this specific scenario? So as we're looking at, the ransomware attack has impacted the production environment. It has impacted the backups, right? Now, we do not have the critical service up and running. So what is the other option? Cyber vault.
I was just going to say, just real quick, I say that's major if you're...
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
you get attacked, and then also your backups are gone too.
Exactly, right. So that's why it's called a severe but possible scenario, right? The probability of this happening is very low. But if it happens, it could be the end of the business. So, yeah, organizations need to start thinking in that line. What's the worst case scenario? Am I willing to invest if it happens? You know, yeah. I mean, all of this goes to decision making, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some scary stuff. Scary stuff, especially if you're an organization that's maybe that's fairly new to kind of getting started and knowing if this scenario comes to light, then it's a wrap. It's over. Like we can't recover from this. It's too much.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I guess just to conclude, So the evolution of cybersecurity performance measurement needs to align with the dynamic nature of cyber threats. So implementing the improvements that we have mentioned earlier, organizations can manage technology risks, transform them into opportunities to build a more resilient economy, collaboration with allied nations to establish and implement these type of measures as a base for baseline requirements and technology procurements globally could further enhance cybersecurity on a broader scale. I think that really taking, like I said, and as we mentioned earlier in the conversation, taking a measurement of, like I said, what are the things we're willing to accept? What are the things we cannot, as far as an organization?
Yeah.
Taking a good stock of like what is that we have as far as our assets. What are things we need to prioritize?
Yeah.
Make sure our readiness is up to par.
Yeah.
How much can we tolerate? You know, how much risk can we tolerate? You know.
Yeah. Right.
Is it too much that we, like I said, that, you know, if we get to this threshold, then forget it, because there's no point of
recovery. Exactly. And I think that's why the starting point really is risk management, to be honest, you know, identifying your assets, identifying your entry points, you know, doing your risk assessment. What are your threats? What controls should you put in place? You know, measuring that and, you know, also ensuring that if it eventually happens, am I able to recover? I think, that's very important. It just starts with, you know, risk management, like the GRC, governance risk management, you know, that's actually the first point of entry. Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. All right. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Interesting article, actually.
Yeah. All right, so now we're going to shift gears to you, Dillian. This is directly to you. as we get to this point, we just learn more about you and have some very tough questions you want to ask.
Tough questions. I'm scared. Okay.
No, but No, I want to know, as far as cybersecurity, how has cybersecurity impacted your career, maybe business endeavors, lifestyle? Just how much of an impact has cyber made on in your life in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, cybersecurity really has impacted my life tremendously. I mean, being in this industry, having the skills I have has given me opportunities to work in different parts of the world, right? And when you read my when you read a little bit of introduction about me, I work with Deloitte in the UK, and I'd gotten my job straight off from Nigeria, right? And it's because of the skills I possess that I was able to come over here. And even working in the UK as well, I've had to work with, people from different parts of the world. I've had to work for organizations located outside the UK, right? So my skills of being in the cyber, because the cybersecurity, the cyber risk is, I mean, it impacts everybody, right? Around the world. Different organizations, different countries, different industries. It's similar risk, right? It might impact everybody in a different way. But having the cybersecurity skills or the skills I possess and being, working in this industry has given me the opportunity to, work with different people. The level of exposure is tremendous. In my day-to-day life, I mean, I have to keep telling my people, educating them the little way I can. And yeah, I mean, it just gives me a different view to life, and it's impacted my life positively. It's impacted those around me positively as well.
Nice. What obstacles have you overcome to arrive where you are today?
Well, I would say I had a really good start, but of course, with every journey, there has been obstacles, right? When I started my career in 2017, there weren't a lot of females in the industry. So, I had some challenges with the gender bias. I remember when I started my career back then, I was working on in an information security team. That was the name of the team at that time, information security, and I was the only lady on the team. It was fun. I absolutely enjoyed working on the team. Every team member was supportive, but I was the only lady. And there were situations. There was a time when I had gone for a security awareness, right? I'd gone to train some people in the training school, and when it was time to train, I stepped out. People were surprised. Oh, it's a lady. Some people don't even know that, ladies get to do that kind of job at that time. Then I went to the restroom, and I had a couple of ladies walk up to me, and they were like, "Oh, I love the presentation. I mean, we've been seeing you around, but we thought you were with the marketing team." And I'm like, "Okay, like, why?" Like, yeah. So at that time, a lot of people are just surprised, right? And that was, I can't even really say that's an obstacle. It depends on how you look at it. You can choose to take that as like, okay, why? Or take that as a compliment. But with obstacles itself, I remembered a time when I was in an internship. Sometimes some people do not want to give you an opportunity at that time because it feels, I was just a lady. So there was a specific scenario where we're doing, there was this networking project, and there was a vendor who had come into the organization at that time to, to lay new cables and all of that. So I was still at university at that time, so I learned a bit of networking, and we had to buy this tester, the one for the RJ45 tester. I don't know if you know it. So I know how to crimp the cables. I know how to arrange the colors, the color coding, and everything. I can crimp it, test it, and it works fine. So when the vendor came in, he needed the members of the team to, help him in getting that done. So I was like, "Oh yeah," I was excited. I was like, "Yes, I have my tester. Can I help you?" And he was like, "No." I was like, "Oh, I can actually do it." So it was like me begging to say, "Give me an opportunity, right? I can't do it." And he's like, "No, you can't, or I don't want you to." It was quite embarrassing because on the team, then I had, other members of the team who were males at that time. I was still in the university, right? I was in an internship. They were crimping the cables, and I was just there, and I was just like, okay. And I was just watching them do what I can do, but I couldn't participate because someone thinks I can't do it, or I don't know what was going through his head, right, at the time. But I think what really makes me happy is that over the course of the years, I mean, people, the awareness is out there. People are now enlightened. people don't see ladies in the industry the same way. At that time, some people, even if they think there's a lady in the IT, like IT field, at that time, there's this perception you should probably look a kind of way, maybe in the jean trousers, with a round neck shirt. There was just this perception people had, a look to it and everything. So if you don't fit that look, it's like, what are you doing here? But things have really changed. Right now, even we have men, we have women, everybody's advocating, right? Because of the shortage in the industry, right? We want people to come into the industry. And also some people are really driving the whole gender balance conversations and also taking in actions to ensure that a lot of women are, coming to the industry. And of course, we've seen that the level of acceptability has really, really increased. Again, owing that to the awareness, right? So people are now more informed that no, this is not just a field for women, and no, sorry, this is not just a field for men. Women can do this. You don't necessarily have to be running under, under cables or in the data center. People had different mindsets then as to when it relates to cybersecurity or when it relates to, IT as a whole in general back then. But things have really changed. So aside that, I would really say that's probably the obstacle I faced. But the people I'd worked with, the teams I'd worked with, they've really, really been supportive. I've not. But the teams personally, I've not had a situation whereby I've not been given a responsibility because they thought I was a woman, right? So that the experience I had was maybe with a
Right.
vendor or also the perception from, other people that were in the bank at that time to say, oh, I thought you were in the marketing department. I didn't know you were in the information security team. So, I mean, perception has really changed, and which is a really good thing. But aside from that, with respect to getting information, resources, I've never had challenges with that. People in the industry are really welcoming. You can easily, reach out to someone, ask questions, and they're just readily available to provide that level of support.
And just kind of tying back to, as you mentioned during your internship and doing that performative work as far as like crimping cables, and your male counterpart didn't essentially was judging, I would say judging you because you were a woman, and if he must have thought that you couldn't do it, knowing that you definitely had the skill and capability to do it. Do you feel, I guess, that type of behavior being pervasive within the cybersecurity field is keeping women from elevating or even pursuing cybersecurity as a career choice? Because not everyone may have the perseverance to say, I don't care what he says, I'm gonna still do it. Because some may take it internally, okay, then maybe I shouldn't do this.
I mean, that kind of behavior can actually keep people out. But right now, with the level of awareness, I don't know. I would really say maybe it's not enough excuse, because regardless of the field you go to, there are going to be different kind of challenges. Life comes with challenges. Life comes with obstacles. So are you just going to, at every challenge or obstacle you face in life, with respect to your given field, are you just going to jump out because of that? So with the level of awareness and acceptability we have right now, I don't know. There's still going to be some challenges, trust me, right? The awareness is maybe not everybody's not gotten to the level where it should, but there's, I mean, it's gotten to a really good place. I don't think any woman right now should be intimidated, about coming to the field. Even if you're intimidated, a lot of women in the industry right now, you can walk up to and speak to, if it pertains to building your level of confidence, because that's very important, right? So yeah,
Absolutely.
at this point, I don't think that should deter anybody. I mean, if we're talking about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, yeah, some people might be timid and say, I don't, I can't face this challenge. But right now, there's a lot of support, really, and I don't think anyone would have a or a lady would have a valuable excuse to say I'm shying away from cybersecurity because we men are not expected to be in this field. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
No, yeah. Like the way you're saying, the way it is not, it's not to say it's perfect, but I'd say it's better, or it's become more acceptable for women to be within this industry, to be able to do this work. I mean, there's a lot of great women that are leading organizations and running cybersecurity programs. So, I mean, that's proof positive right there that women are more than capable to do the work. So, but there are still, I mean, there are still those who have that, I guess, old school.
Mentality.
Draconian mentality.
Yeah, of course. They would always be there.
Should do.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So you're going to have to kind of root out those. But no, I think that's great. And definitely what you're doing is definitely helping the next generation of women that want to pursue and really not just pursue cybersecurity as a field, but really excel in this field as well. So
yeah.
I think you're definitely a proof of that as well. All right. I got a hard hitting question for you. I hope you're ready for this. What is your favorite coffee that gets you through the day?
Well, I'm not really a fan of coffee, really. I have a really sweet tooth, so I'll just go for my odd chocolates. Yeah, I'm not really. Yeah, I just take the odd chocolates. Yeah, I'm it's something I'm trying to work on personally, eating a lot of junk, a lot of sweet stuff, but I mean, that's just what gets me through the day, really.
Okay. All right.
But it's okay, because of you, I actually made coffee today because of you.
Whoa,
so I have coffee, I mean, it's a coffee chat, right? So yeah.
Yeah.
I don't prefer, but I mean, okay. I have it here because of you today.
There we go. See, we're changing lives here in the Cyber Coffee Hour. That's what we're doing. All right. What hobbies, interests, recreational activities that you enjoy outside of cyber? When you're trying to not think about cyber, what you do to decompress, what are some of the things you like to do?
Yeah, I actually enjoy traveling, right? And I actually enjoy spending time, quality time with my family. I'm a family-oriented person. My definition of success is, excelling, with respect to having time for your family, having time for your career, creating that, that balance. I know everybody has a different definition of success, right? So I always make sure I find every avenue to spend quality time with my family. So I enjoy traveling. I've been to a couple of countries. Even when I'm here in London, because I'm based in London right now, I've visited a lot of places, the London High, Madame Tussauds. I keep going to different places, and it might not look like it, but I'm actually a very playful person, right? There was a time when my colleagues had gone to, what's the name again? Starts with G. So basically, you add stuff where you had to go into tunnels, and you're going to go into a tunnel. It's going to bring you out on the other end. We're jumping heights. It was so much fun, to be honest. Okay, it was called Gripped. Yeah, Gripped London. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Gripped? Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, you probably have not heard of it. Yeah, it's fine because you're not based in this part of the world. But it was a lot of fun. So I enjoyed those activities, adrenaline popping activities and all of that. Yeah.
So, what about, do you play any sports like basketball, baseball, anything like track or anything like that?
No.
Those type of
No? No. I don't do that. Sorry.
Gotcha. No.
I enjoy really good food, so I love eating out. That's part of the things I do.
Okay.
Over the weekend with my loved ones, my friends, most of the time, if I'm not sightseeing, if I'm not, jumping around doing all the active activities, I'm probably just at a restaurant having lunch or dinner.
I mean, basketball involves a lot of jumping. So, I mean, you could just do jumping at basketball.
Well, maybe I'll try. I don't know. I'm not promising, but I don't do that right now. Yeah.
Because you mentioned it, I guess you're a foodie. Like, what's your favorite dish? What's the favorite dish that you like to partake in? But also, it's a two-part. What's the favorite dish that you like to make yourself?
My favorite dish, I mean, I'm Nigerian, right? So I'm from Ekiti State. And we have a very popular meal there, right? That's attributed to people from Ekiti State, and that is, I don't know if you've heard of it before, pounded yam and egusi soup. So
You said
that's
I've heard of yam, but because I'm Jamaican, so I've heard of yam, but you said
okay.
pounded yam.
Yeah, pounded
I haven't heard
yam.
pounded yam.
Don't worry. You can
No,
just check for
so
a picture of pounded yam and egusi. That's my favorite meal.
okay.
Even in my home growing up, it might be funny, but because we are from Ekiti, we don't eat jollof rice on Christmas morning. No, that's too basic. We eat pounded yam and egusi Christmas morning. Then jollof rice is like for lunch or dinner, right? Even New Year, after New Year, we're going to pound the yam, right? This is really funny, but I
Oh.
mean, it's a very important meal to us, and it's really, really delicious. I'm sure you can get it around
Yeah.
where you probably live. Just try it. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. It's very delicious. It's a really special meal. So my best meal is pounded yam and egusi. What do I enjoy making? I enjoy making pasta. One, it's quick. I mean, I
Oh.
cook really well. I enjoy cooking a lot. I think I should have mentioned that as part of my hobbies, really. I enjoy cooking a lot. I enjoy feeding others. Also, I enjoy eating, right? So if I enjoy cooking,
Yeah.
I enjoy feeding others, right? So I like trying my hands on different recipes I see online. I still bake banana bread during the course of the week. Yeah.
I love banana bread.
You love, oh my
Yeah.
God, it's so delicious, right? I bake
Yeah.
banana bread, but this time around, I'm trying to reduce the amount of sugar. Because I mean, it's a lot of sugar that goes into baking sometimes, right? So I still bake banana bread. I tried my hands on a lot of recipe, but what I think, because it's a quick meal, sometimes because I do not have so much time on my hands, I mean, making pasta is very quick, right? So I enjoy making it, and it's something I make a lot because it's really quick, and you know, I can just stand
So,
up, dice some.
but when you say pasta, because that's very general, like, so are you talking about like spaghetti, or are you talking about like maybe
Yeah,
linguine
spaghetti.
and some seafood, or like oh, so we're just talking about just spaghetti and meatballs type of thing.
It's fast, so I enjoy cooking. I don't get me wrong. I make a lot of meals, right? But what do I enjoy cooking? It's really fast. I
Yeah.
mean, I'm gonna make it right after this call. It's on my mind already. I'm going to make it because once we're done with this call, I'm gonna be too tired to make,
Yeah.
you know, something
That
more
you're hungry.
stressful, but it's really gonna be fast. You don't have to laugh at me. I'm gonna make it. I just need to
No.
get my ingredients. I have them readily available. I'm gonna make it, and under 30 minutes, I'm done.
Done.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think that's cool. Nice. Well, as we get ready to close, I do have one surprise for you and for our listeners. I did want to play a game.
Yeah.
I'm sure you may be familiar with, and those listening, Wheel of Fortune. And Wheel of Fortune has a segment of this show where it's called the Toss Up Challenge, where they put the puzzle on the screen, and then they'll slowly start putting letters as the time goes down, and you, as a participant, have to figure out what the puzzle is before the time runs out. So, given we're doing this online, doing you and I are gonna work together to try to figure out this puzzle. So,
Okay.
let me bring it up real fast. Okay. And confirmation, you can see the screen. You good?
Yeah, I can.
All right. There you go. All right. All right, this one's a place.
So I'm supposed to guess the word, right? So the
Yeah.
word to sort of challenge.
Oh,
Tropical? Yeah. Party?
tropical. No,
Yeah,
I think
you
it's
got the tropical?
paradise.
Yeah, paradise. Yeah, tropical paradise.
Let's
Nice.
see.
Okay,
There we go.
nice one.
There we go. All right, we'll do two more. See how we do. Like a best out of three.
Okay, fine.
All right. Let's see what this next one is.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Okay. I'll pin spit. Blushing. brushing up on
I'm not
my
sure I know what this is. Oh,
oh
brushing.
brushing up on my Spanish. On my
Yeah, I think you're right. Spanish.
Spanish.
You're right. I give this to you because I know. Okay.
Right, we'll do one last one. Let's see how we do.
Okay.
All right, this one's an event.
It's my first time playing this game, so. Okay.
My
Yeah, probably gonna be. I think something like
rice, something
rice.
rice. No, my first.
Yeah. That's my first time.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah,
In
my first time in
Costa
Costa Rica.
Rica.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay,
There we go.
nice. So 3 over 3.
That
Yeah, great
was
teamwork.
great. Yeah,
Yeah,
that
great teamwork. So before we close, I knew you had mentioned you wanted us to talk
was great.
about the impact of mentorship. I mean, I didn't get to talk about, when I started my career from university, but that's fine, we can skip that. But I know you really wanted us to talk about, the impact of mentorship on my career and, something like that. Do you still want to talk about that before
Yeah.
we close?
Sure. I mean, definitely. Floor is yours.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, with respect to mentorship, and like we had discussed the other time, we had a little bit of catch up. When I started in the cybersecurity field at the time, in the organization, I started my career in the banking industry. So I had a really senior person that had given me a mentor, a lady who was taking me through like my career. But in cybersecurity itself, at the time, I wouldn't say I had someone with a designated title called mentor. However, throughout the course of my career, I've had really important people who I'd run to for advice, right? And a lot of times, they had been my maybe my boss at work that I developed a good relationship with, and I've gone to meet. What certification should I be writing at this point? I mean, there was even a time, I think I'd shared this with you before, that I'd gotten, job offers from different organizations back when I was in Nigeria, right? And I needed to make a decision as to which to go for. And a boss of mine at the time, I told me, I mean, doing, I know your capabilities, I know where you excel at, I know where I think you need to develop, And the job then was the job at Interswitch, right? It had to deal with technology risk, which was not really a part I was really familiar with information security at that time, which is risk management. So he encouraged me, my boss at that time, I was a kid, so he encouraged me, why don't you take the job at Interswitch? I think, I mean, he would say back then when he gives me my, year-end evaluation, I have a really impressive score, but he would say, I think doing this a bit of cybersecurity, like knowledge and risk management at that time. I'm like, he just puts it there because he wants to put in something, right? That's why I just take it back then. So I went to him for an advice and he said, I think you should take this opportunity. At first, I was like, is this what I really want to do? But till today, I'm really grateful to him for that advice. Because on that job, I learned so much respect to risk management. So with that job, it was me transiting from a more technical role, me deploying the antivirus solutions myself, performing the vulnerability scan into, the GRC kind of role. It was a different experience, right? And that experience, I met people who, I mean, people like Wale Gbade, who taught me, the core of risk management. Performing the risk assessment itself. These were things I didn't really have an opportunity to interface with when I was in a very technical role. And it gave me the ability to be able to understand how it all fits in, really. All of these controls we are deploying, all of these things we are doing, it fits in somewhere. There's a risk we are trying to mitigate. This is a control, imparting a risk. It needs to be measured. And I'm really grateful for that. So I just want to say that sometimes, I know some people might be bothered they do not have someone to call a mentor. Sometimes you can find people within your space, people within the industry that you can get comfortable with. You don't have to give them the designated title called mentor. However, these are people you can go to for questions, which you can seek advice from. And I mean, some people think, oh, you need to have that designated, someone with the type of, even if you have a designated mentor, it doesn't stop you from reaching out to some people you think have skills and specific expertise. They don't have to be your mentor. I mean, they don't have to have the word mentor. However, they can be
Right,
people
they
you
don't
can
need to have the
always reach
title
out to,
specifically.
ask for
Right.
advice. And because it goes a long way. I mean, people have been in this industry for years. People know they want to make the decision for you. It's not a mentor's job to make decisions for you with respect to your career. However, the insights during the course of the years, like during their career and all of that, they can, share examples with you, tell you, the pros and cons of, each of your options. And that will really help. Because I mean, I'm grateful for all the bosses I've worked with. I'm grateful for everything I've learned from them, and also grateful for the people I've gone to, and told me, I think you should do this, I think you should do that. At the end of the day, it was my decision to take the advice or not. But I mean, I could have made wrong choices if I've not had those people who had told me, I think if you do this, it's going to help your career more. So I'm really grateful to all of them. So I'm just saying, if you don't have a designated mentor, you can still reach out to people, ask them questions, right? Yeah, and
Right.
that would really help your career in the long run,
No,
anybody's career, really.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree with that because, like even for myself, when I started, my mentor was my, I guess my first mentor professionally was when my first stop, when I worked at the VA hospital, in New Jersey. My first supervisor, he would give me. So again, that was my first IT job. I was transitioning from HVAC into IT at this point in time. I did HVAC, of course. For those listening, heating and ventilation, air conditioning. So I was an HVAC engineer slash mechanic. So I was doing that, in the Air Force, and then like first 5 years in government civil service. And then once I got my first job in IT, my supervisor, he almost really took me under his wing, and he would give me these assignments that I think a lot of people, other people within my shop, they kind of turned down. I'd be like, oh man, I don't want to do it. But for me, I was so green, like who am I to, turn it down? So because I'm trying to learn, and the only way to me, like if, for me to learn is to actually do it and get the experience and, get your hands dirty with it. So I was very energetic. I was very, I was motivated to do the work, to learn and get better. And I think he saw that, and he would always push me, always gave me a lot of great advice. As you mentioned, people, those people who are, make impacts in your life, can, they can tell you, or, just give you insight of, or recommendations of what you should do. And he always helped me. So like, so every, pretty much every stage of my career, even after I left working there, always kept up with him. I mean, he's retired now, but I always appreciated the words of wisdom he imparted on me. The motivation he helped me to as I first got started, and I think that really helped set the foundation.
Very
Not like
important.
my now my I would say my first mentor, I guess non-professionally, would be my uncle, because I. My uncle, growing up at this point, growing up in New York, he lived in Jersey, and when we'd always visit, he'd always have, he was always working on something, PC parts all over the place. And he, I'm thankful he took the time to listen or and answer all my the million questions I had, because he could have been like, man, bother me. But
True. I mean,
just sorry, go ahead.
yeah, I mean, you are talking about your uncle, and yeah, I mean, even your mentor, you could have maybe people, family members. I mean, when you mentioned uncle, it also reminded me of someone that I think I told you before, I stumbled into the field. The IT
Right.
cybersecurity space, right? I was going to study another course, then it was like, okay, that was not working. And it was like, okay, what's the next option? They're like, IT. I was like, what is IT at that time? Because I was always shy away
Right.
from computers, right? Really, because that was not what I was. I mean, back then we had a set of computer in my home. My siblings would always go to, practice with Mavis Bacon, the typing. And the only thing I would use Mavis Bacon for is, I don't know if you use Mavis Bacon. There was this game, The Frog. whereby you're gonna press the Mavis numbers.
Bacon. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the that was the only thing I did with Mavis Bacon. Where my siblings were doing, I just wasn't interested really. And all of a sudden, I found myself the medical course you're gonna study, it's not available to you for social reason. And now I'm like, okay, what's next? It's information technology. I'm like, okay, and I'm googling what is information technology. And I had an uncle at the time. It's more like it's not related by blood, but I could say it was like an uncle that went to for advice at that time, you know, really. Right. And I'm just saying that, I mean, right from getting into this field to this very point, I've had people that I can't give the designated title mentor, really, but they've been really valuable. They're more like mentors, really. We don't have to meet day to day, but people have gone to for advice, really. So from getting into the field to start with, it was someone that was like, "Doing, you can do this. This is a good field. Read more on this. You can make your decision, right?" Getting into cybersecurity itself, making decisions throughout my career, I've always had people, you know, to advise me along the way. And I'm really grateful for all of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mentor is going to come in all different shapes and sizes. They may have that mentor designation or not. I think what it really boils down to, are they making a positive impact?
Yeah.
Are they helping you in your career? And you may have seasons. There may be people that come in your life just for a season, but they're so impactful because they may have shared something with you that really could change your life. So, I don't think if someone needs to have the mentor title, but just someone who is helping you along your way, that's helping you along your path.
Yeah.
So, I think that's great. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, Dorian, this has been amazing. I definitely appreciate you coming on for the Cyber Coffee Hour. Had a good time. Like I say, even we played a little game and everything. So
yeah.
I think the listeners got a treat and I really learned about
it. And I had coffee.
So again, thank you. Yes. Thank you, Dorian.
Thank you so much.
And definitely don't be a stranger. You should definitely come on again for a future episode.
Of course. Yeah, we'll keep in touch. Thank you so much for, you know, inviting me. Yeah. I mean, you brought me out of my shell a bit because, I mean, I'm camera shy, right? So, yeah. I'm glad I accepted to do this.
No, I'm glad you came on. This was great.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everyone. That's it for our episode today, Cyber Coffee Hour. Dorian, thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Bye.